narrative design is really like you take a hold of your narrative, you design it yourself, you tell your own story, and you help people think about how you write the narrative for how people should think about you and your brand and your company. And not a lot of companies do it. I think it's, you have to have a real process to do this. I think it's built on top of great positioning. But if you have an awesome process to do this and you take it seriously, you can control the narrative and you can create a broader story that really sets up your launches and company and really gives your company a lot of focus and direction.
Hey, I'm Cody Bernard, and you're listening to Getting to Market, a show that gives you an inside look into what it takes to successfully launch a new product. In each episode, we'll chat with go-to-market leaders about how they go to market, covering the tools, tactics, and tricks that they use so you can take your own product launches to the next level. My guest today is Marcus Andrews, Product Marketing Group Lead at HubSpot. Today's episode is brought to you by theproductlaunchmasterclass.com. This is the product launch course for product marketers that need help transforming their launches into their CEO's favorite marketing weapon. It was created by my former colleague, Dan Murphy. Dan ran product marketing at Drift and is now running brand and product marketing at Privy. Over 150 product marketers have taken the course and learned Dan's proven launch framework. You can check out their reviews of the course at theproductlaunchmasterclass.com. Now, the course normally costs $99, but because you're a listener of Getting to Market, you can get it today for only $59. All you have to do is use a promo code Getting to Market, all one word, all caps. Again, that code is Getting to Market, all one word, all caps. Visit theproductlaunchmasterclass.com right now to get this course. So with that, let's get into today's interview. I'm here with Marcus Andrews, product marketing lead of the Marketing Hub at HubSpot. Marcus, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Cody. Excited to chat.
Me too. I'm super pumped about this because I think you have a ton of experience in the podcast game. You have your own podcast with the Product Marketing Experts. Quick plug, if you haven't checked that out yet, definitely make sure to jump on Spotify or Apple and give that a listen. I know I've learned a ton through your interviews with product marketing leaders. So hopefully, you know, this conversation can be pretty fluid, and I'm definitely going to lean on your experience in the podcast game to try to get the most out of this episode.
Thanks, man. It's good. I've really enjoyed your podcast too. And I think it's great. It's, you know, I hear from people all the time how there's just like not a discussion happening around this stuff. And people, there's so many product marketers who are just like the lone product marketer at their company. And like, you know, having podcasts that go into different topics and launch, I think it's super helpful for people. So.
Right. And I'm pretty excited just for everyone to hear from one of the most notable companies, right? Like a pillar company in Boston specifically, but just even in B2B tech, HubSpot, and just, you know, sharing your experiences of how you guys have done product marketing there, specifically focusing on the launch process. I think people should get a ton of value out of
it. Yeah, we've been working on it for a long time, you know, so like we're at a really big scale with our launches now, but it's evolved a lot in the 5 years that I've been at HubSpot. So I've learned a ton. I think with, you know, one of the great things about working at HubSpot is that any marketing thing that we do, we want it to be cutting edge and really, really great. And so our launch process and just product marketing in general has been through all sorts of iterations and revs, and we're always trying to make it better and stronger. So glad I can share some insights into kind of how we do it, how we think about it.
For sure. So tell us a little bit about your role in product marketing at HubSpot.
Yeah, so I'm the product marketing group lead for Marketing Hub, which basically means I lead the product marketing for everything in our Marketing Hub suite of products. So Marketing Hub is our oldest, largest, most mature suite of products. It's what we started the company with. HubSpot's got a full front office suite of products now. So we're a CRM with marketing software, sales software, service software. There's a CMS, there's other software as well. There's software lines that are rolling out. But Marketing Hub is our biggest. So I've got a team of product marketers that I manage and we own. We're tightly aligned to that product group. We really own the launches, the positioning, the messaging, but also just like the overall marketing health of our product line. So we work with, you know, typical cross-functional team. And yeah, that's kind of my role and what I cover.
Awesome. Yeah. So HubSpot has been around for the last decade. And for those who might have been living under a rock over the last 10 years, what does HubSpot do? What's the quick elevator pitch?
Yes, we help companies grow better. We've got a CRM software. We're a CRM platform is the easiest way to think about it. So, you know, you've got your CRM, which is usually like your nucleus for your company, especially for marketers, the customer database. I think that to do really good marketing, to do really good breakthrough marketing today, you need to be data-driven and customer data-driven and really built around your customer. But yeah, we're a CRM with suites of tools for marketers, sales teams, service teams. We have a CMS, everything you need to really grow your business and run a really tight, successful front office team. We have this idea of the flywheel at HubSpot, which is kind of what we're oriented around. So that's, I think, what we're going to talk about a little bit today is like the flywheel. And it's a narrative that we use to kind of describe the business and how you can use HubSpot. But that's something to check out if you want to learn more about like what HubSpot does.
For sure. And I think you just hit on something that I would love to get a little bit, you know, deep on in today's episode, which is just the concept of narratives. And I know you've done a ton of your own content and publications around this concept of narrative design, something that has seemed to be incredibly interesting. And I know a ton of people are starting to follow suit with how they approach their go-to-market. So could you just give us a quick overview of what narrative design is?
For sure. So, you know, the like a lot of companies, I think they look at their space and their technology and they say, this is kind of where we fit in. You know, we do this thing. And so that means that we're part of this, like we're in this category, we're part of this group. And there's all these assumptions that you have to figure out to kind of fit in. Narrative design is the idea that you're really just taking control of your narrative. And so if you build something, you fit into this category, there's a narrative that is associated with you. Narrative design is really like you take a hold of your narrative, you design it yourself, you tell your own story, and you help people think about how you write the narrative for how people should think about you and your brand and your company. And not a lot of companies do it. I think it's you have to have a real process to do this. I think it's built on top of great positioning. But if you have an awesome process to do this and you take it seriously, you can control the narrative and you can create a broader story that really sets up your launches and company and really gives your company a lot of focus and direction. I think the companies that you see, like Drift, especially when Drift was coming out of the gates, and HubSpot and Gainsight and Gong, they all have a very clear identity and they all have a very clear story. And so then you know exactly who they're for and what they're trying to achieve and like how they're going to help you adapt to a certain change in the world. Most companies don't have that because they just try and like, you know, they build their technology and then they kind of try and fit into their category. I think it's, you know, that's the summary of what it is. But the reason why I love it is because it's, you know, in B2B SaaS right now, there's so many companies that just look like every other company. It's like you want a meeting solution or service software, and you do some Googling, you try to evaluate your options, and every single company looks like every other single company. And I think it's because as a startup, there's some safety in that where it's like, hey, you know, we're going to create this company. We're small. Nobody knows about us. Let's just try and look like, let's try and like adapt or let's adopt the status quo. And like our brand and colors and messaging and idea and whether the way we talk about our technology is going to look like everybody else, that we kind of sneak in and like fit in. But it's really a bad idea because like it's so hard for everyone to make a decision these days because technology has become more commoditized. It's very easy to do like, you know, good marketing and kind of fit in with the status quo. But that's super hard for buyers and consumers because you don't have any signal for how to make a decision. So it's just like you're overwhelmed. You're like, holy shit, there's all these options. Like, take control of your narrative, tell people how you're different, tell people a story, and they'll listen, they'll perk up. And so yeah, those companies that do that well have that really strong identity, have that like it factor. And I think it's just because they design their narrative, they take it seriously.
So when you think about narrative design, do you think of it at the company level, or do you think when it comes to, you know, launching a new product, do you think that there's a time and place for that as well? Because I'm just thinking generally, there's your overall company narrative, right? And then you have something that you're bringing to market, some product that you're launching, some feature that you're launching. And where I see a lot of companies sometimes fail is that they don't figure out how does that fit into our overall message, right? So how do you go about doing that?
Yes. So, I mean, you can kind of do it. If you do it right, you do it once and then you have this narrative forever. I mean, so I didn't work at HubSpot. I've been at HubSpot for 5 years. I wasn't there when Brian Halligan designed the original narrative, but I learned a ton of my approach from working with him. But his inbound marketing narrative and how, you know, they noticed this change in the world that people were ignoring these outbound push messages and that there was a new type of, there's this change in consumer behavior that nobody had really adapted to. That narrative and the emergence of inbound marketing, he's still telling that same story 15 years later now, and it still works and it still makes sense. And so that's awesome. That's huge. You don't want to be the company that changes your narrative every 5 days, right? Because it just gets super confusing. And it's really tempting too, because if like marketers, you know, we look at stuff and we're like, oh, what if we did this? Or what if we tweaked this? Or what if we added this? And it's like this consistency is super important. But you can always build on it. You know, I think the, I like this video game analogy where it's like narrative design, the term is a term from video games. But I like video, that's a video game analogy because you build kind of like level, you like build the world, you know, you create the world, but you can always add new characters. You can add new levels. You can add new like tools for people to play with. If you should do those things as your company matures and grows, like we're just talking about Drift and how you have a core narrative, but it's evolved and it's changing and you're adding levels to it and that sort of thing. And I just think that makes the narrative better. But yeah, hopefully you don't change it. The narrative that I worked on to launch Service Hub was a narrative called the Flywheel. And it was essentially like, there's this larger narrative around inbound marketing and the main tool, the main, like, you know, you can also think about your customers as like the hero, right? And you're like, you're building tools that you give, you know, weapons or tools that you give to them. And like the original tool for inbound marketers was the funnel. We retired the funnel. We replaced it with a new tool called the Flywheel. And that was kind of a huge, that was at the time, it was a really, really big update to the narrative and kind of like a sub narrative inside of it. So I think as your company grows, you roll out new product lines, you roll out new products. You don't want to reinvent the narrative, but you do want to have like new players, new levels, new tools, because it makes it fresh, but you're still inside the existing narrative. So hopefully that wasn't too vague or like conceptual, but that's how I think about it.
No, actually the video game analogy I like a lot, and I don't know why, but the first thing that came to mind for me was Westworld. And it's like, you have like this world, right? And you can introduce like different narratives per guest or per host or whatever the terminology is within that show. But no, that definitely hit home with me, and I'm sure it hit home with a lot of people.
I love Westworld. It's such a good show. And there was the narrative designer inside of that show. And like Westworld is very video game inspired too, but like, I remember watching that show and I'm like listening to the narrative designer guy. And I'm like, that is like, he's a product marketer. That's like kind of what we do. And it's just a good, like, I feel like it unlocks your thinking around it too. When you really think about it as you're doing positioning and you're trying to figure this stuff out. But if you think about it, like you're designing a game for people to play and there's rules inside of this game. And there's an environment and like, no, you will never have a customer who comes in and thinks that way. But if you're thinking that way, you get way more, I think you get way more strategic and you think about it in a way that like really resonates with people in terms of like human psychology, right? Just because I do think that people want games and they want to know what's right and what's wrong. And they want to know how you're different and how you think about things. So the Westworld, it is part of kind of the inspiration for how I thought about that term and like why I think it makes sense.
So for today's purpose, we're going to talk about Marketing Hub Enterprise specifically and the launch that you did over the last few months with that. How did that fit into your overall narrative, or what was your launch process? What did that look like?
Yeah, so Marketing Hub Enterprise, we launched in January. It's a SKU that we've had for a while, but we relaunched it in January of this year. It was a really great launch. It fits into the narrative, like it's all part, especially because it's part of Marketing Hub, it's part of the greater inbound marketing story. The positioning that we went with Marketing Hub Enterprise was always easy now meets deeply powerful. And so we wanted to just kind of talk about this combination of powerful tools are great and are interesting, but it's all like, if they're not usable, if they're not easy to use, what's the point? And that's kind of where we wanted to start the conversation. And it was, I think it's interesting because there is this, there's like a big change out there in the world, which is the consumerization of software. Like every software, B2B software in general, is starting to look more like consumer apps and less like a spreadsheet. And that's because people like to use that stuff. People would rather use things that are intuitive and easy, and we're all educated by the amazing apps that we have in our pocket, you know? So that was kind of the story, and it just played into all the themes that we always talk about. So the flywheel and inbound marketing, you know, we knew kind of how those fit together. But the new kind of positioning that we introduced was this always easy meets deeply powerful, because Marketing Hub Enterprise is where we introduce our most powerful products. And we had a bunch of really awesome updates to kind of powerful products inside of that SKU. So account-based marketing and multi-touch revenue attribution reporting and team partitioning. And so the challenge was like, we have all these awesome products, you know, let's tell a cohesive story about all three of those inside of this SKU and also make it interesting. So that's kind of where it came from.
Got it. So was there anything more like that was, you know, the driving factor behind the reason why you launched it outside of kind of bringing all of these things together?
Yeah. So that was part of it. The, I think what we really wanted to do was, you know, we had our enterprise SKU, but it wasn't all that different. You know, it's different from our pro SKU, but a lot of it was like limits or like how, you know, how much you can do of certain things. And we wanted to put real powerful product into the enterprise SKU to make it more meaningful, you know, to really differentiate it from the pro SKU. That was a huge part of it. I took some notes here. What were the other things?
Yeah, packaging is also just incredibly hard when you have multiple plans, because you want to give a reason, right, for the buyer to make that decision to upgrade. Yeah. And if you don't have differentiation, it makes it incredibly hard to showcase what that value is.
It makes it hard to sell too, right? Like it's like, you know, it's tough for sales, it's tough for the market, it's tough for buyers. So that was a big one. We wanted to differentiate it, make all that clear. That was more of a product marketing challenge there. I think we also knew the competitive reasons why we weren't winning upmarket deals and deals with this SKU. So the things that we added in were strategic based on what is going to help us win, you know, deals in that space. And then the other thing, which I think was really smart, was that going into the year, we wanted to have a big launch right off the bat in January to just step on the gas in January to just kind of as much to spark revenue, but also just to like get the sales and marketing machine going really early in the year. I think it was super successful. It was lucky because we had the launch in February, and then, you know, COVID and the world kind of changed, it was flipped on its head in March. So it was good timing from that perspective. Yeah. But those are kind of the initial reasons that we put the launch together.
Yeah. That's fortunate that you had the groundwork laid before everything just changed and everybody wasn't in the office to be able to just go to somebody's desk and say like, hey, you having trouble with this? Let me help you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think people have figured it out, but I mean, you know, there's all sorts of stuff that everybody had to sort through. It's still sorting through, right? But like, especially in the first like Q2, the end of Q1, the beginning of Q2 this year was a challenge for everyone, I think.
For sure. So when it came to launching this, do you guys have any sort of process that you've put into place? I'm assuming so, just given how mature you guys are as an organization now, but what does that look like?
Yeah. So the big thing that we use, so we have like a prioritization process. I want to give you the good stuff. So let me pull up my notes here.
Love that. Try to get as detailed as possible on this show so people can.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to just speak. Sometimes I want to get it. We can get tactical here. I want to show you walk you through some of the phases. So the thing that we have that everybody has is like, you know, we call it the P system. So it's like a launch can be a priority 1, 2, 3. Or four is kind of like, it almost doesn't exist, but 1, 2, and 3 have pretty clear outputs. It doesn't mean that it's a like a template. The PMMs can get really creative with kind of how they approach it. But a P1 is when we're going to pull out all the stops. We're going to get full support from leadership. We're going to get full support from marketing, sales, and any other team that we need. So it's taken a long time to get there with HubSpot because it is challenging when you're such a big company to say, like, we're going to have everybody work on this one thing as part of a P1 launch. That's really tough because people have to change plans. But we do it, and Marketing Hub Enterprise was maybe not the highest P1 launch, but it was up there. So it was like, you know, in between P1 and P2. So we do that. Then the phases, I'll say these phases are in kind of like an ideal world, right? Like, we don't always stick to these in order. They don't, a lot of the times they're happening at the same time. A lot of the times they change. But there's some pretty distinct phases of them. And there's a research phase where early on we're trying to size the opportunity, put in specific research around the people or persona if we're moving into something new, marketing competitive analysis, messaging research. I think with any great launch, there's a pretty tight research phase early on that really helps us like establish our goals and helps the product marketing team establish the right campaign, like positioning, but also the campaign that marketing should execute. So, you know, there's a research phase, there's a launch planning phase. So I think what we're doing in the launch planning phase is like trying to figure out the timeline, really understanding the pricing and packaging implications, really figuring out the positioning and packaging of the products. There's a lot we can figure out here. Tightly defining the target audience, starting to figure out starting to figure out the narrative and like the creative themes that we want to lean into, not like specific creative, but just trying to make sure that we're tight on the narrative and the ideas that we want to lean into. We use a tool called a Darcy, you know, which is just like a way of trying to figure out who's the decision maker, who's accountable, who's responsible, blah, blah, blah. Making sure we have our core team, who's going to be part of this, is all in this launch phase. And then we do a roadshow. And so the roadshow phase is really like, you know, a huge part of launches is internal marketing. I've heard you guys talk about this before. And you need to, you know, a launch can go badly because people aren't on the same page and they don't know about it. And like trying to just communicate out, just like, I call it mind melding, you know, you're just talking about stuff and just getting on the same page and just like mind melding. That's always step one, to make sure people know what's changing, what's new, what the opportunity is, what the risk is, you know, what the concerns are. And then the second part of it, once you move past that, is just to get people freaking excited, you know, like go into team meetings and get people pumped up for this thing. And usually I think a good PMM can come in with, you know, a point of view and also help inspire, in one meeting, like the team that's going to chase down some social proof for this. But in the next meeting, you know, the team that's coming up with like a demand strategy for this. And the next meeting, the team that is going to create some ads or whatever it is. And so it's like, that's why it's good that we're creative generalists, you know, so we can come in and we can kind of help them see the vision for what this could be. I think that makes a huge difference. And then we kind of go into production. One of the things with HubSpot, which is really helpful, is that we have a project manager for all of our launches now, which is relatively new. But PMMs are still responsible for a large part of project management, but we have an actual project manager who comes in and helps organize this, because things are so crazy and big and cross-functional now that, love them, they're amazing. You know, Jiras get filed, teams go into production, we start to see stuff come out, this phase takes a while. We finalize our deliverables and then we launch it. And you know, the launch a lot of the time is, I think it's good when it's a moment in time, but we don't do just like, there's just launch day. Like you'll see stuff happen across the course of a couple weeks usually, which is just great for us, because if you try to coordinate everything into one launch day, just things go wrong. You don't have the impact that you wanted to. You spread it out a little bit, you have more impact, it gives teams more room, it makes it easier to kind of roll out. And then we do like a post launch phase. So there's, you know, there's a post-mortem, there's reporting, we try and figure out what went well, what went wrong. So those are our big phases in an ideal launch.
That's awesome. And I think I was talking to Andrew Forbes from Zendesk, and he was mentioning that they have a program manager. And I can't tell you how jealous I am of that, because that takes up at bare minimum 50% of the time is just project management and making sure like that the work back plan is being followed to a T. And I know that if we were able to focus our energy elsewhere on some of the other aspects that you were talking about, it would be a better use of our time. But at the same time, it just, it helps you sharpen that skill a little bit more. So, I mean, it's more of a blessing and a curse. How involved are you early on in the research phase? I've heard everywhere from product marketers only getting involved once we realize what we're building, or I've heard product marketers say like, yeah, I mean, I brought this idea from feedback that I received from the customers or just analysis I was doing of the market, and that's how it came up. How does that work at HubSpot?
So we're pretty in the weeds with our product teams. And so usually if there's something that they're thinking about, we know about it, and we've at least had, I've been in some conversations about this already, you know, so there should have been at some point, like, our input about the market and what we care about or what we think is marketable or what is interesting is hopefully getting to the product teams. But I'm definitely on the side of like, I'm going to let the product teams kind of do their thing. I think it's a response, because at HubSpot, we have a really good product team, and our product managers are also non-technical PMs for the most part. So they have a very good sense of what is good marketing, what is the market doing. They're deeply tied into our customers. So I know some product marketing teams spend a lot of time trying to like influence the product roadmap and make sure there's that like, you know, they're delivering a lot of strategic insights to the product team. We do some of that, but I mostly just wait until there is a good, I don't know how to describe it, but there's a certain point when I know a product has emerged from like the ether of just concept and is like, okay, there's clear direction here and clear vision here, clear enough, because it always starts off really murky, and then part of product marketing job to help figure it out. But for the most part, you know, if it's multi-touch revenue attribution, that was really baked and really tight and really clear for the vision. So there's a lot that we can come in as a product marketing team and do to help. But I wasn't going to add any value by getting into that and trying to like, you know, deliver insights on how the market thinks about reporting or do customer research, because they'd already done all of it. So for me, I have a mental gauge after 5 years of HubSpot, when is the right time to get involved. But I think it's later than a lot of teams. I really put a lot of trust in my product team, and it helps me stay focused and save time, I think.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as that. I think ultimately we're always talking to customers. We're always aware of what's going on in the market, and we can funnel that back into the product team. But they're also, that's their job, right? Like, their job is to speak to customers and figure out what problems they're going through and figure out creative ways to solve them. So I have a ton of trust in our product team as well. I think there is a time and place for product marketing to play a heavy role in defining the roadmap or what should be built. But I think like, if you're at a smaller company, you're not going to have the time for that, or that might just not be where you should be spending the majority of your time. So I think, yeah, it's more of like, that's just, it depends on the company.
I think our approach is good too, also, just because I think you need that there. I hear about a lot of product marketers who have trouble with the swim lanes between PM and PMM. I've never really had a problem with it, and I just think it's because maybe early on in my career, but I think if you understand what PM is going to do and trust them to deliver on that, and you know, for the most part, stay out of the weeds with it, I think it helps with that relationship a lot. I will say there are times when it's like, I see something that I think that I'm like, whoa, that's scary, you know, or like, that's wrong. Or like, you think you can hit this beta date by the launch date? And they're like, yeah, we can do it. And then I'm like, I dig in a little bit. I'm like, I'm not so sure. And like, that's one, you know, the other thing is sometimes things will be positioned really oddly where I'm like, where, you know, a confident PM will be like, we're building this thing and it's going to be just like, you know, whatever, it's going to be like Notion for Uber, right? I made that up. But I'm like, okay, but if you say that, then customers are going to trigger a set of expectations in people's minds. So are you sure you want to say that? Like, show me the list of their features and then show me the list of our features. And if it's less than 75% as good as them, like, I think it's a very bad idea for us to say that we're in that category or we do that thing. So I'll do stuff like that. But that's pretty far after the initial idea is baked, you know?
Got it. Yeah, I think that makes sense. So who do you typically get involved with outside of product when it comes to bringing something new to market? Obviously, there's marketing. Obviously, there are sales. But who are your most closely aligned departments?
Yeah, really those. I mean, I think the, you know, the, I think it's smart to have a core team of people who really care about the launch. So having someone from product at HubSpot, we have these go-to-market leads who are embedded in product, who are an awesome partner. And they essentially, there's a GM of each product line. There's a director of product. There's like a go-to-market lead. And then there's product marketing. That group is a really great group because we can control, you know, product development, and are super influential in the go-to-market of everything. And so there's a lot of, that's a really powerful group because it's easy for us to make decisions and act quickly. And it's nice to have like a small group of people who can make some important decisions about a product. Outside of that, sales, but mostly our sales enablement partners. So we have a really great sales enablement team who can bring the voice of sales. Also, they know what they need from product marketing. We work really well with them. So they're sort of our window into the sales team. We're talking to sales too, but that's really the most important group to make sure that like the rollout and launch is gonna hit what we're trying to do for sales. Same partner for services. And then usually I try to optimize our launches for certain marketing teams. So like early on in the launch, let's not just say we want to work with every marketing team. It's like, you know, it's like, let's pick our spots and say it's these three teams. And if we, you know, if we mess up with these three teams, where the whole thing's off, right? Or like the most opportunity is with our partner channel or our customer marketing team or paid acquisition, you know? And like, if we know that up front, let's put in, let's get these people really, really close, put a lot of time and effort into them. And instead of just saying like, we're going to put all our chips like everywhere. So just, I try to do that prioritization, make sure those teams are plugged in. And then there's like a larger weekly or bi-weekly meeting that we have that the project manager sets up, which is awesome because they will run through like the agenda, which is, you got to get it, Cody. It's really helpful. I don't know who to talk to. I'll send somebody an email, but like it makes the launches just run so much smoother. But yeah, so then there's this larger email with like lots of stakeholders.
I can't wait to send the snippet to somebody on my team.
To a certain point, it's so hard. I mean, it's like, and it's not, I always admit it. It's not a skill I'm good at, you know, like I think I'm a great product marketer, but like, if you want excellence in project management, I will do pretty good, you know, but I will not bring like excellence in massive cross-functional project management. It's just, it's a hard thing, right? So having someone on it is super helpful.
Well, it's just also that you need to be able to go incredibly deep in these other areas. So if you're spending totally. Your time trying to be the best at both things, you're going to sacrifice one thing or the other.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah. So actually, I was going to ask you this, and I think you answered that question, but the project manager or program manager, when they set up that weekly or biweekly meeting, is everybody involved, or is it mainly those group of four people that you talked about in the beginning, and then you bring in people from other departments as needed, like sales enablement or marketing or whoever you're looking to talk to?
Yeah, so that group I was talking about at the beginning, that's sort of like the brain trust, and we, you know, the GM is a VP, and usually we have a director, a VP of product, that's kind of like the brain trust. We're talking a lot, you know. It's nice to, you know, you're on Slack, maybe meeting with those people weekly or sitting next to them if you're physically in the office, I think is great. And then yes, the project manager organizes a larger meeting, and so usually it's really big, and you don't want it to become like a total status update meeting, but it's nice to just get critical updates or blockers from this group as everybody's going through. So we have a big spreadsheet is the main thing. There's some teams use Jira, so it's like a spreadsheet that's linked to Jira tickets a lot of the time. And then there's this big weekly meeting and a weekly email for our largest launches. But yeah, that big meeting has mostly for marketing. Just because our marketing team is so big and there's so many moving parts for the launch, like primarily for marketing, but sales enablement, products will also be in there too.
Got it. When all of these people are in this meeting, or just when you're creating the go-to-market plan with just taking into account everyone who's going to be involved, how do you go about setting goals with these groups? Is it you have a top level set of KPIs that all funnel up into, or do you go individually to all of these different functions and departments and say, hey, we're going to set goals for this launch with you specifically?
Yeah, so they will set their own goals and they will build their own plans. But we will go in with like, here is the revenue goal. You know, here's the company goal. Here is how we think that this translates to your team. So we will give them that advice. We will give them that direction. You know, we can sometimes that might be super specific. Like, right, if we're going to, you know, the team that's like working on customer stories, we might come to them and we'd be like, hey, for this product that we're launching, there's these clear three use cases. I want to have an awesome customer story for each three of these clear use cases. Like that's the goal, right? Like let's have these three. So sometimes it's that. Sometimes we'll go to a team, you know, and talk to the director of new business is one that's always I'm always trying to figure out, and you know, we'll kind of lay out the revenue goals and the opportunity as we see it, and like why there's that opportunity. It's like there's this upsell opportunity from this SKU to this SKU because everybody is really, really hungry for this product, something like that. But then I will just say, like, I don't know what that means for your goals, right? Like, this is, you guys, I think with that information, you can set the right goals. But yeah, you know, I think the main thing that we want to do is get really crisp and clear about the revenue goals and the business level goals, and then help figure out how we can translate that into marketing goals. So it's like, the big goal is, you know, grow this SKU and change some brand perception. What are the levers inside of the marketing engine that we should be pulling, and how, and what is a good goal for that? And then we'll bring those to those teams and then we'll help report on them.
Got it. Yeah, I think goal setting is super important because, I mean, otherwise you're just kind of launching something and you're moving on to the next. And then a lot of the time that launch that you just had can fall by the wayside, and then adoption isn't as good as you would have liked it, or you didn't hit any sort of the revenue or pipeline targets that you had in place, or just like help the marketing team hit their goals, right? So I think having a clear understanding of what the goals are and having them documented is super valuable, just because then you can get everybody working towards that together.
Yeah. And we'll serve as the bridge there too, you know, because sometimes it's very clear that like, you know, the product team has Amplitude, and they have like each product has like an event. So we know that, you know, if it's, you know, there's some sort of activation event that the product is prioritized. So it's like random launch, but we built this like lightweight project management team tool called Projects. And like, we knew that the first time someone implemented their first template, that was the path to adoption, right? Like if people do that, they're 50% more likely to become a powerful user, right? So like, then what we can do is focus some marketing on that adoption event. So it's like, all right, you're telling me that if people do this thing, then we know that they're going to be successful. Let's have our big customer webinar, and halfway through, we're going to dive into the product and have every single person on the call like do this thing, right? And it spikes the usage event. So like, you can do stuff like that too, if you're really focused on something pretty tactical. But then we're the bridge, right? Because otherwise marketing would never know that. Marketing would be like, well, we're gonna run this webinar, we're gonna do this thing, but they would never focus in on this one thing. And product would never tell them that. So I think that's a nice place where product marketing can help with goals too.
I like that idea about the webinar and getting people more involved, rather than just them listening to some 30 or 60 minute overview where somebody just walks through a bunch of slides. It's like, no, we're either going to walk through this together. And then that way it's just more tangible for them too. I think that's super cool. Something I've never thought of before.
Yeah. It's a good way. I like to structure webinars that way, where it starts off as, this is maximum relevance. We're going to talk about probably the narrative that we designed, you know, like whatever the most interesting element of that is, that's going to draw in as many people as possible. You keep people's attention, but then you're like slowly bringing them down to the product. And by the end of it, you are in the product, and hopefully everybody in the call is in the product too, if it's a customer webinar, or you say like, prospect webinar, spin up a free trial, jump in and let's do this together. And it's fun. And you always see the product team is like, what did you do, Marcus? Like, why is there this massive spike in our usage event? Like, we had a customer webinar today, so it's always good.
Like, yeah, I got you. So what other things do you do outside of just a customer webinar post launch? You mentioned like it's not just like this one day thing. It's, we do this over the course of a few weeks to make sure that we can continue the momentum post launch.
Yeah, so for sure. I mean, I think you want to do the you know, the same thing, right? Where it's like, let's capture, usually early on, I'm thinking for Service Hub now, you know, there's a, we've basically built a really rudimentary, like, blunt funnel where it's like, all right, I had this acronym called the WHALE. And so the WHALE was like a funnel. And it's like, step one is we're going to win the internet and we're just going to try and make, you know, it's an awareness play. And then we're going to forget. Oh, step two was hatch the egg, which the egg was part of our methodology. And so basically, I think you just want to bring people down. So it's like, you want to capture as much attention as you can. And then you want to pull people into something that is, you know, closer to the product. And then you want to get people into the product, and then you want to educate people on the product, and then you get people. So like, you know, there's, I think if you think about it that way, where launch day is a lot of tofu, awareness building. And then after that, you're making sure that, you know, you're trying to educate these new folks on something specific, and then either get them talking to sales or get them into the product or get them, you know, you have, so it's like, I think you can think about your strategies and tactics as that, like that. And so post-launch, you're doing more education and you're getting people into the product, and then you're talking to sales and try to work with the different teams. So we take that approach. At HubSpot, we're pretty, even though there's PMMs who own specific products and different product lines, we still pretty much work on something for 90 days and then kind of move on. You know, we don't have these, I think some PMM teams are like, you launch this thing and then there's all this work continually over the year. I think that can work, but I think we found the most value, the most leverage and value is in these launches. So we have this, you know, there's a big 30, 90 day window where we push on something and then we kind of move on to the next thing. One, because we have to, because our product team is so big and we're smaller, right? Like most product marketing teams, but then also because it's just what has the biggest impact.
I was going to say, hopefully it's because you've done your job. And you've driven the usage, you've driven the pipeline, you've hit your goals to a point where it's like, okay, great. Well, what's next? How do we go and help the business?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So what would you say was probably the biggest challenge that you faced throughout this launch or even throughout the service up launch?
Yeah. So for Marketing Hub Enterprise, it was timing. You know, it's funny. I had in September of last year, my wife and I had our son Emmett. So I didn't go out on pat leave. I was out for 3 weeks initially when we had the baby. And then I came back. And if you want to forget about work, have a baby, right? It's like, if you have a challenge unplugging from work, like have a child and you will very easily unplug. So was super unplugged, come back into the office after those initial 3 weeks. And they were kind of like, hey, we want to relaunch Marketing Hub Enterprise in a month. And I'm like, whoa, you know, like a month. Okay. And then, so we started to figure that out. And then everybody kind of realized the impact that would have. It's just, you can definitely do a good launch in a month, but at a company the size of HubSpot, it's really hard to pull off a great launch in a month. We need more time. Ideally, you need like 3 months. So we extended the timeline. It grew a little bit, but that was the major challenge. I was taking the rest of my pat leave in January. That gave us like November and December to do all of this work, which are holidays.
Already shortened
months. So, right. And so the friction that caused with the other marketing teams, I think that's a huge thing as a product marketing team too. Like you have to have a lot of empathy for your different teams. You know, even if you have executive buy-in, if you come in and you're like, hey, you're doing this thing over the holidays, like it's just going to burn people out and, you know, be really challenging. So the timing of it and how it all came together was super challenging, and probably that's on us because we haven't educated the leadership team where a lot of the push came from on our process enough, and like how long it takes to have a good launch. So we executed a really good launch in a tight timeline, but that was a big challenge. I think, like, you know, it's hard and it's just another like project management-y thing. But I think if you do get a good sense of that early on, like probably what I should have done is when I came back and they're like, hey, we're going to do this launch in a month. I think we did some of this, like the team that was launching it, where it's like, whoa, we're going to have to really scale back to figure this out. But I think like as the lead product marketer on this, you have to have a good sense of like, okay, you want to launch this in a month. That means here are the compromises that we're going to have to make, or we have more time, you know, like in here, like these are considerations because it's just not going to, no one else is going to think about it, you know?
Right. Timing is always an issue. And I think if you have the ability to push back and you can just come to the table to your point, like what those trade-offs might be, then it's like, yes, okay, great. You're either going to make the decision to still move forward with it, or you're going to say, Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Maybe we should extend the timeline a little bit on this.
Yep. Yeah, totally.
So what would be the biggest piece of advice for somebody who's going to be running into their next launch, or maybe even somebody who's doing this for the first time?
Yeah. So one cool thing about this launch that I learned, curious what you think too, is that what we did was that we pushed on the SKU. So when we launched it, we I know this is something that people are faced with all the time. Like the SKU, like Marketing Hub Enterprise already existed, but we relaunched Marketing Hub Enterprise and like, oh, is that interesting? I think was the question. None of our customers, nobody in the market asked that question because they're not thinking about it like we are. They're like, it's just news. And it's like, oh, HubSpot's going to talk about something. Like, great, awesome, tell me more. They don't think like, oh, what, you know, this already exists. Like, is this news? And what the news was were the new products that we were adding into it. So we had three really awesome marquee products that we were adding into the SKU, but we didn't, and we talked about those products. So the launch was very product driven, but we also talked about how Marketing Hub Enterprise solves for, you know, the sophisticated modern marketing team. And what that allowed us to, what that gave us was that sales then had something to sell. So like you can launch a product, but if you don't know what is the, it's harder to tie that to revenue. So like you could launch a product and have some adoption goals around it. You could launch a product and say like, hey, this is news. Or you could wait a little bit, take a few really great products, use it to strengthen and update and get build excitement around a SKU, something you can sell, and then relaunch that SKU. And so that was awesome just because like there's this very direct tie to revenue. And I think the sales team loved it, you know, where they always like our launches because it helps them. But this was like, you gave me this, you know, more expensive SKU, and you put a ton of energy and interest into it and all these awesome products. And now like selling it is very easy, where in the past it was very, you know, was harder. So that's kind of what I learned. I think it was, we won't always do that, but I just really think pushing on a SKU versus individual products, you know, you have to be at a certain maturity of your company, but I think it is really effective.
It gives you the opportunity to just reposition it, right? Like, cause there's clearly a need because like it's either not selling enough or the sales team isn't comfortable selling it, or there's no pull from the market. So it just kind of, by bundling those features and adding it into that new plan or that new package, it's like, okay, great. This gives us a reason to go and reintroduce this to market. And there's so much noise out there where people are just like inundated with a ton of stuff that, to your point, like a lot of people aren't even going to notice. They're not going to notice that you already had an enterprise plan. It's like, no, they have this new awesome thing. And then it just flies off the shelf, hopefully.
Yep. And it's totally true. I mean, even if you have a great package that people love, you know, over time, it's going to become like, you know, there will be new stuff that's being added into it from the product side, but also the market will be changing. And so people will care about different things. And so over time, it's just like, you know, it's kind of the positioning kind of like pushes apart and breaks apart. And like you said, it's a way to revitalize the package and make it relevant, make it interesting, put everything, you know, shine a spotlight on all the stuff you've been working on, been added to it. So with you.
For sure. Well, Marcus, thank you so much for coming on to today's episode. I learned a ton, and I know a ton of people are going to take away a lot from this. If you haven't already checked out the Product Marketing Experts, make sure to do that. Yes, we're talking about product launches here, but Marcus goes incredibly deep with product marketing leaders on everything else from hiring to building teams to working with departments and everything you could possibly think of. So again, Marcus, I can't thank you enough. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on, Cody. Really appreciate it, man.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Getting to Market. If you like today's show, hit the subscribe button and tune in every Thursday to hear from more marketing pros on how they run their product launches. I'll see you on the next episode.